From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross.
She said, darling, I'm in love with your mind. The way you care for me, it's so kind. Love to see you again, I wish I hadn't more time.
That's singer-songwriter and guitarist Richard Thompson. A new CD box set collects over 40 years of his work. On today's Fresh Air, we feature excerpts from his visits to Fresh Air, including an in-studio concert. Also, the Coen brothers have a new film that is their first vaguely personal one. Critic David Edelstein has a review of A Serious Man.
But I'm missing the stool. But I'm missing the stool. But I'm missing the stool. I thought she was saying good luck.
First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli of TVWorthWatching.com, sitting in for Terry Gross. Over the past 41 years, singer-songwriter-guitarist Richard Thompson has made a lot of great music in different settings. In the 60s, it was as guitarist for the British band Fairport Convention, one of the most important folk rock groups. In the late 70s and 80s, he performed with his wife, Linda Thompson. And since their divorce, he's performed solo under his own name, continuing to create evocative music. Often darkly humorous, sometimes just dark. A new box set, Walking on a Wire, 1968 to 2009, collects 71 tracks covering Richard Thompson's entire career, from his early Fairport Convention days to his latest solo work. Here's one of the songs included on the new box set, Richard and Linda Thompson from their 1982 album Shoot Out the Lights, performing his song Wall of Death. Richard Thompson is such a welcome and frequent visitor to Fresh Air that today we're pulling performances and interviews from three different appearances. The first is from 1994, when Thompson brought his guitar to the Fresh Air studios and spoke with Terry about his CD, Mere Blue. He opened with Easy There, Steady Now. Terry asked him what inspired that song.
I don't know what I was thinking about when this was written. It's a very kind of paranoid song, it's a kind of a real kind of urban desolation song, I suppose. And, the guy singing the song is really kind of trying to control himself. But yeah, you get the feeling that, you know, he isn't going to succeed. It's a little dark as a song. But I thought, well, you know, dark song, let's put it to a nice wacky sort of polka beat. And that'll fool everybody into thinking it's something a little lighter than it is. So it's got strange things. I play a lot with an acoustic bass player, Danny Thompson, who's no relation. But the arrangement for this, we kind of worked up together. So, you know, some of his ideas went into the arrangement. So it's all kind of, it's funny, kind of, you know, Bulgarian bits and things in it. I don't know where they come from.
Jackknife with a precious load, spills its guts all over the road. Excuse me, I had to smile, lost my grip too for a while. I said, easy there, steady now. Easy there, steady now. She didn't have the decency to sweep away what's left of me. I don't have the presence of mind to walk along in a straight line. Easy there, steady now. Easy there, steady now. I call your name, I call it loud. I see your face in every crowd. Empty town, Dr. Martin's echo down. Old man heartbreak follows you, corruption shadow swallows you. I said, easy there, steady now. Easy there, steady now. Easy there, steady now. steady now, easy there, steady now.
I don't know that I could think of another guitarist who combines the best of folk and rock better than you do. And I'd like to go back to when you first got a guitar and ask you about what you were listening to then, what direction you thought you wanted to head in back when you were however old you were.
I don't know if I had a direction, you know. I don't think you think when you're that young, or if you do, you're you know, Mozart or something.
Why'd you want a guitar?
There was already a guitar in the house. My father played guitar, and there's a lot of guitar music in the house. You know, Django Reinhardt records and Les Paul records, and then my older sister, you know, when rock and roll came along, she had Buddy Holly records and Gene Vincent records. So it was lots of guitar stuff. So it was very logical to pick it up and play it, and I really tried to play everything. So I really absorbed, you know, a lot of folk stars and a lot of rock stars, you know, really, you know, probably before I was 15 or 16.
What was your father playing?
He was playing dance band jazz, very badly, though. He wasn't, you know, he was just an amateur musician. And
so what context did he play in? He was a policeman?
Yeah. So he was, you know, he just noodled around the house. I mean, I think at some point he was in a dance band, you know, the swinging cops or something like that. the four truncheons.
So did you teach yourself?
Taught myself a bit. My sister's boyfriends used to teach me. A couple of her boyfriends, you know, play guitar. So I, you know, while they were waiting for her to get ready, which is usually a good couple of hours, I get a good guitar lesson, and then. I took classical lessons at one point for a couple of years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So when you were say a teenager, mm-hmm. what were the licks that you were trying hardest to learn?
The Buddy Holly sort of stuff. Sorry, I'm in the wrong tune. That's the Elvis stuff. That sort of stuff. The Shadows, who were a great British instrumental band, were very that kind of stuff. And the sort of folk stuff, yeah. And away we go, heave away, Santiago, oh! Bones off Australia. Hey! A lot of that sort of stuff, you know. I used to go to folk clubs as well, so you'd get a real diet, you know. You'd see someone really good. You see Davy Graham one week and then somebody, like, really atrocious next week. But then, you know, you could see blues artists coming to Britain from about 63 onwards, 63, 64.
And did they leave a big impression on you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's great. You know, you could see someone, you know, you'd heard on a record and you thought they were dead, and then, you know, they'd turn up. It was just fantastic.
So you were learning to play in many different languages, really, when you were starting.
Really, it used to play a very wide range of music. And when Fairport started, we were really doing the same kind of thing, you know. We tended to be whatever band was required to get the gig. So if they wanted an acoustic band to play in the folk club, you know, that was us. You know, we just get a repertoire together and do that. And if they wanted a blues band, then, you know, we'd learn some blues and be a blues band. So I suppose it was a good education. And at a certain point, we settled down to playing a kind of, you know, a sort of a traditional-based rock style that's fairly constant, still constant for me.
But you really have a lot of folk in your playing and in your singing.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have family from Scotland. You grew up in London. But was it ever a roots kind of thing for you?
It was, yeah. Well, you know, I grew up, you know, listening and not really thinking about, you know, Scottish music. You know, there's a lot of Scottish dance music in the house. And, you know,
that your parents played?
Yeah, or? You know, and the bookshelves were lined with sort of Walter Scott and Robert Burns and stuff, which, you know, out of boredom, you know, I used to read and actually I kind of got into. But back a generation, my family really used to be very musical. You know, my great uncles used to have a dance band, you know, in Scotland. And they play Scottish country music and jazz.
Scottish country music? Is it like just...
Scottish dance music, yeah.
Oh, okay,
you know,
right.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Sorry, I'm in the wrong tuning again.
So,
You know.
Did you like that when you were growing up? Because a lot of people grow up very much disliking the music of their parents and their grandparents, and then when they get older, they go back to it.
I liked it, but I discarded it. I thought it wasn't important, and it definitely wasn't fashionable. You know, until I was about, you know, 17, 18, really. And
why did you go back to it then?
Well, I started to listen to more traditional music, and I started to connect it. You know, going to folk clubs and hearing a really great, you know, Scottish-Irish singer. I thought, oh, you know, this all makes sense, you know.
Now, did you think it would make sense within the context of your playing? You know, did you think you'd find a place for it within the context of rock and roll?
No, I really didn't think so. But in Furport, you know, we were sort of a thinking band. You know, we were a bit intellectual, you know, for better for worse. And we used to think, well, you know, what should we do? You know, what's our direction? You know, do we want to be a secondhand British blues band? You know, do we want to be a really lousy soul band? You know, or do we want to be original? And in pursuit of sort of originality and meaning, I think, in our music, it took us to play traditional music with a more contemporary lean. You know, and that for us was satisfying. And we thought, well, you know, here's something that we can do best. Here's something, you know, if Muddy Waters ever tries to sing the Bonnie Bunch of Roses, he'll come really unstuck, you know. We can show him a thing or two.
Richard Thompson speaking with Terry Gross in 1994. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's 1994 interview with Richard Thompson. A new CD box set spanning his entire career, Walking on a Wire, 1968 to 2009, recently has been released.
You want to do another song for us?
Okay, yes.
How about another one from the new album? There's a song called Mingus Eyes, which is Charles Mingus. And
it refers to Charles Mingus.
Yeah. Do you want to say something about the song?
I could say that I suppose it's a song... of someone looking back at youth, you know, and saying, you know, how stupid people are when they're young, because they think if they look like James Dean, then people will think they're cool and intelligent. Actually, people think they're stupid, you know. And perhaps at some point in your life, you realize that you look stupid. So, you know, in the song, you know, the protagonist says, you know, he used to think, you know, if I talk like Marlon Brando and people can't understand me, and If I make big soulful eyes at people like Charles Mingus, then perhaps they'll think I'm really great, but maybe not. Brando mumbled
time she fell. But then she got wise. Brando to James Dean. The Stanislavski tease. Or the rebel punch that kills. Or the smile that slowly disappears.
Great.
Thank you.
Something else I have to say about your guitar playing. It's all the technical virtuosity is in service of the music and the emotion. I just feel like you're such a not show-off player. You know, yeah, right. Such. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Yeah, might as well.
I'm sorry. I felt I had to point that out. Yeah. No, anyways.
Some of the people.
Yeah. I love it. Now I had to talk to you about your voice, too. We've been talking about your playing.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the days when you were learning Buddy Holly licks and Elvis Presley, you know, things off of Elvis Presley records and stuff, what were you trying to do vocally? Did you think of yourself as a singer yet, or were you just focusing
not really.
On guitar?
I didn't really sing. Except for my own amusement, probably. I'd probably get up in a folk club and sing, but it was pretty awful, I'm sure. I never really, you know, tried to be a singer until, I think when Sandy Denny left Fairport, then us chaps, we sort of looked at each other. so, oh, who's going to sing? So we sort of reluctantly, you know, took on the roles. But we weren't born singers. I mean, you know, I've really had to work very hard to get anywhere as a singer, and I'm still working at it. And, you know, even 10 years ago, you know, I don't think I was very good at all. And 20 years ago, I was pretty horrible. You know, just, you know, singing live a lot and doing solo shows a lot helps me to be better.
Richard Thompson speaking to Terry Gross in 1994. We'll hear more stories and more music from Richard Thompson in the second half of the show. For now, here's one of the most recent songs from the box set, a 2007 song from the point of view of a soldier in Iraq. The song is called Dad's Gonna Kill Me, and the dad in this case is short for Baghdad. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.
out in the desert, there's a soldier lying dead. Vultures pecking the eyes out of his head. Another day that could have been me there instead. Nobody loves me here, nobody loves me here. Dad's gonna kill me. Dad's gonna kill me. You hit the booby trap and you're in pieces. With every bullet your risk increases. Old Alibaba, he's a different species. Nobody loves me here, nobody loves me here. Dad's gonna kill me. Dad's gonna kill me. If I can live through today. Before I came out here, I never used to pray. Nobody loves me here. Nobody loves me here. Dad's gonna kill me.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Angie's List, providing consumer reviews on local professionals, from doctors and veterinarians to plumbers and roofers. Details at angieslist.com. From LendingTree, with the innovative Loan Coach, which provides personalized financial advice for every step of the lending process at LendingTree.com. And from Subaru, with the safety and performance of all-wheel drive on every vehicle. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. This is NPR.
Coming up, more with Richard Thompson. A new box set collects over 40 years of his work. And David Edelstein reviews A Serious Man, the new film by the Coen brothers, set in suburban Minneapolis where they grew up. David calls it a Jewish take on the question of cosmic injustice. This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, in for Terry Gross. Richard Thompson recently released Walking on a Wire, a CD box set spanning his entire career, from his Fairport convention days in the 60s to his recent solo recordings and concerts. So we're listening back to some of his many visits to Fresh Air. The first one was in 1991.
Now, a lot of British rock performers were inspired by the British blues revival. What effect did that have on you?
I probably went the other way. I think I was slightly repulsed by the blues revival.
Repulsed?
Well, I've always, you know, since I was about 11 or 12, I was listening to the blues, you know. And when the blues revival came along, there was suddenly like thousands of British kids playing, you know, what were really inferior versions of Howlin' Wolf and B.B. King and Otis Rush. And I thought, well, this can't be right. You know, this isn't really any good. This is always going to be nothing more than a pale imitation of this wonderful music. You know, kids living in the suburbs of Manchester, England, are never really going to capture it. Because, you know, there's things that you can't know, there's experiences you can't have about America and about being black and that way of life, you know. So I sort of went the other way, really. I think the blues revival and the popularity of soul music in Britain in the 60s really drove Fairport to traditional music, really, to an indigenous form of music.
So when you turned the other way and found music that was traditional in your country, the kind of folk ballads that you drew on, was that a return for you to that kind of music, or was that a brand new discovery of it?
It was a bit of both. I think what we knew about it, you know, sketchily, really. We'd always, you know, hung out in folk clubs and listened to traditional performers, and well, we had a bit of it in childhood, and they ram a bit of it down your throat at school, you know. But actually, to really understand it and get into it, we had to do quite a lot of research. We had to do a lot of learning. We had to spend a lot of time with traditional musicians to learn our stuff, really.
Why did you leave the band when you did?
I was writing a lot of songs that didn't seem to have any place in the band. It was very difficult for me to take those songs because they seem really rather eccentric songs, rather bizarre songs.
But like Henry the Human Fly?
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that ended up on Henry the Human Fly, you know, which is a very eccentric album. And but it was a direction that I really wanted to explore, and it seemed it'd be better. I'd have more time to work on it if I was outside of the band. You know, I was reluctant to leave because they were all great friends, and we still are great friends. But, you know, bands have to change.
For many years after the Fairport period, you performed and recorded with your wife, Linda Thompson. And I think a lot of people assumed that the songs that you were singing were personal songs about your relationship together. I'm wondering if that is something you feel like you would never want to do again. In other words, to really sing with someone who you had that close a relationship and to sing songs about a relationship together.
First of all, I'd say that the songs really weren't about a relationship, whatever people might think. you know, again, the songs were fiction. What was going on in the subconscious? I mean, I don't know. And but there's nothing deliberately written about, you know, people. Obviously, if you're writing for a man's voice and a woman's voice, you have to write some songs from a woman's point of view. So if you're writing about relationships, then, you know, you have her angle, then you have his angle. And it almost looks as if you're writing a, you know, a kind of soap opera. But would I like to do it again? It's difficult, you know, like all, I think it was, it's a difficult thing to sustain, you know, a career and a marriage at the same time, where you're in such close proximity all the time. You know, you're working together and you're at home together. Very hard thing to do. I wouldn't want to do it again.
Richard Thompson on Fresh Air in 1991. His new box set, Walking on a Wire, featuring songs from 1968 to the present, was recently released. Here's the title track, recorded in 1982 by Richard and Linda Thompson.
I hand you my ball and chain. You just hand me that same old refrain. I'm walking on a wire. I'm walking on a wire. And I'm falling. I wish I could please you tonight, but my walking on a wire, and I'm falling.
Richard and Linda Thompson from their 1982 album, Shoot Out the Lights. We'll continue with our Richard Thompson retrospective after a break. This is Fresh Air. In 2002, Richard Thompson came to Fresh Air to perform songs from a show based on great tunes he didn't write, called A Thousand Years of Pop Music. It included a Shakespearean song, a madrigal, songs by Hank Williams, the Beatles, and a hit made famous by Britney Spears. Terry asked him about that one.
Nowadays, when people want to illustrate how bad certain pop music is, they will use as an example, Oops, I Did It Again, the big hit by Britney Spears.
Would they do that, really? Well, yeah, that's a shame.
You have taken that song and you're doing it in your show. Obviously, there's something that you really like about the song or the record.
Well, I think it's a good song. I think it's somewhat in the Swedish pop tradition. As far as I know, the songs are written and recorded in Sweden, and then they get flown over to the States, and Britney puts the voice on, and then they fly them back and produce them, and the results are mega, you know. I kind of like Swedish pop music, you know, the Cardigans and ABBA and what have you, you know. And I think it's kind of a good song, and it's quite witty in its own way. And I don't think it's terrible. I could find a lot more terrible songs around these days than this.
Well, why don't you do it for us?
Okay. I think I did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends. It might seem like a crush, but that doesn't mean that I'm serious. But to lose all my senses, it's just so typically me. Ooh, baby, baby, oops, I did it again. I played with your heart, got lost in the game. Baby, baby, oops, you think I'm in love, that I'm sent from above. I'm not that innocent. You see, my problem is this, I'm dreaming away, wishing that heroes truly exist. Cry watching the days. You see, I'm a fool in so many ways. But to lose all my senses, that's just so typically me. Ooh, baby, baby, oops, I did it again. I played with your heart, got lost in the game. Ooh, baby, baby, oops, you think I'm in love, that I'm sent from above. I'm not that innocent.
That's good.
It's not so bad, is it?
Yeah, that's very good.
Richard Thompson recorded in 2002. That was one of the songs included in his show, A Thousand Years of Pop Music. Let's keep moving and get right back to the other Richard Thompson concert we're featuring today, recorded in 1994.
There's another song I'd like to ask you to do called I Can't Wake Up.
Okay, here it comes.
In my nightmare, everything's wrong. I'm waiting for love, but you come along. You smile, you wave, you kiss me, ciao. But you seem too happy to see me somehow. Then the sky falls in on my head. Your nails grow long, your eyes turn red. You say forever, dear, and a day. You swear that you're never gonna go away. And my feet won't move to run the other way. And I can't wake up to save my life. No, I can't wake up. Save my life. In my nightmare, you forgive me. The cruelest gift you could ever give me. I say that you understand me now. Your eyes say, brother, I get you somehow. And then the lightning streaks across the room. You smell like something fresh from the tomb. You squeeze too hard, you insist on kissing. When it seems like half your face is missing. And your hair's turned into reptiles hissing. And I can't wake up to save my life. No, I can't wake up to save my life. I done make my dreams go bad. Like Buster Boy's coming home to dad. What you reap, so shall you sow. Your feet don't fail me. Go, man, go. Cause I can't wake up to save my life. No, I can't wake up to save my life. No, I can't wake up.
Is there a story behind the song?
It's just, you know, it's just a story. High notes. It's just a dream, you know.
Bad dream.
Bad dream. I suppose it's a kind of, a classic put-down song, really. It's, you know.
There's something I want to quote here. Can I ask you to quote the line? This is from The Way That It Shows. I just think it's particularly well-written. Couple of lines here. Can you quote the first few lines?
Oh, that one. Can you give yourself away to some Casanova on the spills and stains of a backstage sofa? He'll catch you yawning with one leg over.
I think that's really great writing. I mean, I think
Casanova over. Well, I, at that point, I was the rhyme scheme was getting desperate. I was running out of possibilities.
I'm not even thinking about the rhyme, but the spills and the stains on the couch. I thought that was really nice.
I was actually thinking of a backstage in Philadelphia.
Oh, really?
I can't remember what the place is called. A really sort of rundown rock and roll theater. And it's got the smelliest couch I've ever seen in my life.
Huh.
You know, you can sort of smell the sort of improvised sex oozing off this couch. Quite disturbing.
Now, who are the songwriters you admire? And did you ever go through a period of trying to write in the manner of different songwriters, like you went through a period of trying to play in the style of different guitarists?
Yeah, I think it's a great exercise. I still do it. You know, I still think, well, you know, here's a songwriter who, you know, has a great kind of flow or something. You know, why don't I try and write a song in that style? You know, I still do that. You know, early on, I was listening to. Well, I was listening to you know, people like the Everly Brothers and, you know, Phil Oakes and Richard Farina, and I've always been influenced by Scottish ballads. I think that's probably the richest place you can find songs, because they're just so good and they're so stunningly, you know, succinct.
But they tell whole stories.
There's so much in a verse. And it's so beautifully pared down over centuries. Just wonderful stuff. So that, you know, that's a big influence. And so some of the Scottish, you know, writers like Carolina Oliphant and Burns, you know, Burns Walter Scott.
Can I ask you to play a chorus of one of your songs that you feel is especially influenced by traditional Scottish ballads?
Whew, gosh. Okay, let's think of it for a second. Oh, you speak the words locked in my breath, but it's late for me. Let an old man rest.
barricades to keep me safe from loving.
And it goes on. But in terms of, you know, verse structure, you know, word usage, word repetition, blah, 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 you know, and tune. I mean, it's very...
And the way you sang it.
Very Scottish, yeah.
Yeah. I've really just so enjoyed the concert. I'm so thrilled we were able to do this. I want to thank you very, very much.
I'm very grateful you'd have me. Thank you.
Would you like to close with another song from the new album? Or if you prefer something earlier? Or?
Yeah, I could do something earlier.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, what would you like?
Do you feel so good?
Okay.
Yeah, why don't you feel so good?
Okay.
This is from a previous album from a couple of years ago called Rumor and Sigh.
It is indeed, yes. Here we go. I feel so good, I'm gonna break somebody's heart tonight. I feel so good, I'm gonna take someone apart tonight. They put me in jail for my deviant ways. 2 years, 7 months, and 16 days. Now I'm back on the street in a purple haze. I feel so good. I feel so good. I feel so good. I'm gonna break somebody's heart tonight. I feel so good. I'm gonna make somebody's day tonight. So good, I'm gonna make somebody pay tonight. I'm old enough to sin, but I'm too young to vote. Society been dragging on the tail of my coat. But I've got a suitcase full of 50-pound notes and a half-naked woman with a tongue down my throat. And I feel so good. I feel so good. I feel so good. I'm gonna break somebody's heart tonight.
Richard Thompson from a 1994 Fresh Air performance. That last song is one of the 71 tracks featured on his new box set, Walking on a Wire. The Fresh Air performance was recorded by Audrey Bentham. Coming up, film critic David Edelstein on the new Coen Brothers movie, A Serious Man. This is Fresh Air. In a 2008 acceptance speech after winning an Academy Award for No Country for Old Men, Joel Cohn thanked the industry for allowing him and his brother Ethan to, quote, continue to play in our corner of the sandbox, unquote. The Cohn brothers' 14th feature, A Serious Man, is set in suburban Minneapolis, 1967, not far from the sandbox in which they played as kids. Film critic David Edelstein has this review.
Joel and Ethan Cohn's adaptation of Cormac McCarthy's No Country for Old Men had a radical twist for the thriller genre. The hero, Sheriff Bell, played by Tommy Lee Jones, gave up. He concluded that the world was ruled by cruelty and chance. God might exist, but he'd gone elsewhere. A Serious Man is the Coens' Jewish take on the question of cosmic injustice. It's set in suburban Minneapolis, where they grew up, in 1967, when Joel was 13 and Ethan 10. They'd reportedly intended the film to have two protagonists, a 13-year-old boy and his father. But as they wrote the script, the father moved to the center. He's Larry Gopnik, a physics professor affectingly played by Michael Stuhlbarg, a stage actor who's never had a lead role on screen. Like mischievous angels, the Coens seem to enjoy bombarding him with bad things. At first, his life seems a model of stability. His son is about to be bar mitzvahed, and his college is on the verge of granting him tenure. Then his world begins to get strange, even David Lynchian, if you go by the slanted light on the flat landscape, the hard angles of lawns and fences and ticky-tack houses. Most devastating is the news that his wife is taken up with an older man, a widower named Cy, played by Fred Melamed, who wants her to have a Jewish divorce, a get. The philandering Cy looks like he could play Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof and fancies himself a moral Jew, or as the movie calls it, a serious man. Stuhlbarg's Larry endures this misfortune with passive incomprehension. His face tightens, his lips press together from the effort not to scream. He's teaching Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, so his science won't help him understand the forces in the universe. When a friend in leg braces, played by the luminous Catherine Borowitz, says it's not always easy to figure out what God is trying to tell us, Larry goes to a series of rabbis. The first is a young assistant who advises him to appreciate the beauties of God's creation and gestures out the window to a remarkably forgettable parking lot. The second, middle-aged, says God owes us nothing. The obligation goes the other way. There's a third, ancient rabbi, who doesn't ordinarily have office hours. The desperate Larry makes his case to an unsmiling secretary.
Please, I need help. I've already talked to the other rabbis. Please. It's not about Danny's bar mitzvah. My boy Danny, this coming Shabbos, very joyous event. That's all fine. It's more about myself. I've had quite a bit of tsuris lately. Marital problems, professional, you name it. This is not a frivolous request. This is a I've tried to be a serious man, you know? Tried to do right, be a member of the community, raise the... Danny, Sarah, they both go to school, Hebrew school, a good breakfast. Well, Danny goes to Hebrew school. Sarah doesn't have time. She mostly washes her hair. Apparently, there are several steps involved, but you don't have to tell Marshak that. Just tell him I need help. Please, I need help.
A Serious Man is far from perfect. Some of the dialogue is mannered. Larry's wife is a cartoon shrew, and there are too many fleshy close-ups that emphasize things like ear hair. But it's the first of the Coens' films that seems vaguely personal, not just because it has elements of their childhood, but because the tone is less controlled, as if they weren't sure where they were going when they set out to write. Is it a comedy? A tragedy? It's on the border. It's like a broad Jewish joke that slowly becomes a Jeremiad, a tale of woe that keeps you wondering if the punchline, when it comes, will make you laugh or want to kill yourself. Larry's son smokes dope before his bar mitzvah, and the vision of the rabbis from his stoned perspective is both uproarious and oddly consoling. The Coens might not believe in the substance of the Torah, but they seem to respect its solidness in a chaotic world. Their vision is morbid, absurd, but not nihilistic. A Serious Man opens with a quote from the Bible scholar Rashi. Receive with simplicity everything that happens to you. The lesson of this haunting film is stuff happens, and if you're going to lose, lose gracefully.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine. You can download podcasts of our show at freshair.npr.org.
When the truth is found to be
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hersfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. John Sheehan directed the show with Roberta Shorrock. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bean Cooley.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, working to help vulnerable kids and families succeed at aecf.org. From the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And from Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. At FordFoundation.org. This is NPR.
I've got your picture that you gave to me.
Roseanne Cash was 18 when her father, Johnny Cash, wrote a list of songs he thought she should know. On the next Fresh Air, we hear some of those and talk with Roseanne Cash. Her new album is called The List. Join us.
I've got your picture.